So, we're reading from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhyalila, chapter 9, text number 349 to 358. So what I will do is I'll read just the translation, 349 to 357, and then we'll chant 358 together, and then we'll speak a little bit on this pastime. This chapter is entitled Lord Chaitanya's Travels to the Holy Places. Okay, so 349. Afterwards, Kashi Mishra came and fell down at the lotus feet of the Lord, and the Lord respectfully embraced him. 350. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya then took the Lord with him to his home, saying, "Today's luncheon will be at my home." In this way, he invited the Lord. Excuse me. 351. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya brought various types of food remnants that had been left by Lord Jagannath. He brought all kinds of cakes and condensed milk preparations. 352. Accompanied by all his associates, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's house and took his noon lunch there. 353. After offering food to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya made him lie down to rest, and he personally began to massage the legs of the Lord. 354. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then sent Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya to take his lunch, and the Lord remained that night in his home just to please him. 355. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his personal associates remained with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. They all stayed awake the entire night as the Lord spoke of his pilgrimage. 356. The Lord told Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, "I have traveled to many holy places, but I could not find a Vaishnava as good as you anywhere." 357. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, "I received much pleasure from the talks of Ramananda Roy." The Bhattacharya replied, "For this reason I requested that you meet him." Okay, I'll just actually speak the purport here also before we go to 358. Purport. In the Sri Chaitanya Chandradaya, beginning of the 8th act, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, "Sarvabhauma, I have traveled to many holy places, but I cannot find a Vaishnava as good as you anywhere. However, I must admit that Ramananda Roy is wonderful." Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya replies, "Therefore, my Lord, I requested that you see him." Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then says, "There are, of course, many Vaishnavas in these holy places, and most of them worship Lord Narayan. Others, who are called Tattvavadis, are also Lakshmi Narayan worshippers, but they do not belong to the pure Vaishnava cult. There are many worshippers of Lord Shiva, and there are also many atheists. Regardless, my dear Bhattacharya, I very much like Ramananda Roy and his opinions." Okay, so 358. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Thus I have ended my narration about Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pilgrimage, describing it in brief. It cannot be described very broadly. Purport. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur points out that in the 74th verse of this chapter, it is stated that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited the temple of Shiali Bhairavi. But actually, at Shiali, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited the temple of Sri Bhuvaraha. Near Shiali and, Chidambaram, there is a temple known as Sri Musnam. In this temple, there is a deity of Sri Bhuvaraha. In the jurisdiction of Chidambaram, there is a district known as Southern Arcata. The town of Shiali is in that district. There is a temple of Sri Bhuvaraha Dev nearby, not Bhairavi Devi. This is Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's conclusion. Interesting. Okay. Om Agyanita Marandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Militamina Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam, Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uttapada Kamalam, Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha, Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Twamsajivam. Sadvaitam Savadutam Purjana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam. Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha. Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Suta Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasudhi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So, quite a few things that we can discuss here. So Lord Chaitanya is traveling to so many different holy places. And as he's traveling to these different holy places, he's having different experiences in these different holy places. At one place, he will uncover some of the writings of Bilvamangala Thakur, Sri Krishna Kanamrita. In another place, he will save Kalakrishna Das from the Tattvavadis. He'll debate with the Tattvavadis, but he will also save Kalakrishna Das in a different exchange. At one point, he'll see Parashuram. So he will engage in different pastimes and leelas. And those pastimes and leelas, they have a purpose. In fact, everything in our Shastra has a purpose. We cannot know God completely because he, by definition, is unlimited. So his pastimes are unlimited. In fact, everything about this personality is unlimited. His names are unlimited. The Shastra will say that as many waves as there are on the ocean, there are that many names of the Lord. And even those names, they also have different connotation. Some of the names of the Lord, they relate to him in relationship with his creation, material creation. But his material creation is secondary, right? So things, names such as Vishnu, Maintainer, etc. And then there are other names, Bhaktivinoda Thakur has explained, other names which are much more rasik. Every class, Jayarada Madhava. Kunja Bihari, speaking about the Lord and his pastimes in the spiritual world, in these very intimate places in the spiritual world. So primary names, secondary names. So he has unlimited names. He also has unlimited forms. So unlimited rupa. In fact, even though there are listed qualities of the Lord, we can also say with confidence, he has unlimited qualities. Everyone can relate to Krishna. The strong can look at Krishna. He's killing all these demons. That's my Krishna. Right? Strong, tough, takes everyone out. No one can stand in his way. He's the most loving son of Yashoda Mata. That mood of very, very loving, nectarian exchanges, that attracts. He has so many qualities to attract. And then there's also this Leela. Leela is very special. Leela is very dynamic. Why? Because within Leela, you have everything else. Right? All the other ingredients are stirred, are mixed in. All those other flavors, the different names are in the Leela. He's addressed by his loving associates by different names according to the leela that he's performing at that particular time. So the name, that is an ingredient in the leela. A particular form of the Lord is present in that particular pastime. So his rupa, a particular rupa, is present in that leela. He's also of his unlimited qualities. Some of those particular unlimited qualities are being emphasized in a particular pastime. So those gunas are there as well. Those different qualities are there. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is expanding and explaining, or rather, he's engaging in his leela. He's engaging in various pastimes. So one of the things that we understand about Lord Chaitanya is that he's Bhakta Avatar. That means what he does, even though he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he's acting as a devotee. So what he does is instructive for us. He is going to these different places, but he is also giving Krishna consciousness. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nanda Ki Jai Shri Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Shri Shri Gaur Nitai Shri Prabhupada Tulsimarani Ki Jai. So, he is on this pilgrimage, and we are also meant to follow that example. We are also meant to develop a taste and an interest for the Lord's pastimes. Where did he go? What did he do? Who did he interact with? What can we learn from this? It is the Dharma of the soul. It is the eternal function of the soul. Just as Lord Chaitanya has done, to also do this, to also really develop an interest in the Lord. Who is he? What does he do? How does he interact with his devotees? Unless we do this, we cannot know him in full. Because actually he's ever increasing. In fact, here this purport, or rather this verse, Chaitanya Charitamrita is saying, thus I have ended my narration about Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pilgrimage, describing it in brief. It cannot be described very broadly. There'll be so much unlimited detail. We will sometimes see that the great acharyas, they will write commentaries to the different pastimes. And we may sometimes wonder, how did they get all this extra detail? Where is that coming from? Right? It's coming from their level of spiritual realization. By their level of spiritual realization, they not only read about these pastimes, but they can be fully absorbed in those pastimes. And because of their full absorption in those pastimes, they can also see all of this additional detail, and they can bring out all of these flavors in those particular pastimes. Therefore, it is a wonderful gift of the Lord that he sends his pure devotees to the world. And that is a manifestation of his mercy potency. He will send his pure devotees who know him intimately to explain exactly how we can go back to him and how we can come out of this state of amnesia. Because in the material world, everyone is in a state of amnesia. We've forgotten who we are, and even worse, we've forgotten what we actually need in order to be happy. We are like every living entity in the material conception is like an individual who's looking for love in all the wrong places. So we look for it in prestige. It's interesting. That's an interesting one, right? It's said that that desire for fame, it is the last thing to leave. Right? The last anatta to really become cleansed. So it is amazing how the material energy works. The psychology of the material energy is so bewildering that we don't see the obvious. For example, you will have many people who think, you know what, it'd be great to be famous. I'd love to be famous. And when they will look at other people who are famous, what they will see is not the reality. They will see the elements of the reality that they're attached to. Right? So what does that mean? It means that we'll see this idea of fame, and we'll see the money, we'll see the adoration, and we'll think, yeah, I could sign up for that. Sounds good, right? How do I put myself down for some of that? So what happens is, because of our material attachments, we have a distorted vision of reality. The things that we think are going to make us happy, those are the things that take up the entire frame. And all the things that come along with it, which if we were honest and objective would be obvious to us, those things recede into the background. Right? Let me give an example. Do you realize how many famous people have to have bodyguards all the time? Do you realize how many famous people have constant threats, not just on their own life, but on the life of their friends or family? Right? If you don't give me this, if you don't give me that, I'm going to kidnap your children. Right? I'm going to expose you. Do you realize how many famous people are constantly being set up for situations where they can be extorted? But when you see them on TV or in some situation, none of that occurs to us. Right? And this is why it's so dangerous to have an impure consciousness. Because the impure consciousness means a distorted vision of reality. There's no question of seeing things as they are, as long as we've got all these material attachments. And that's a serious issue. Why is it a serious issue? It's a serious issue because all our decisions are based upon our perception of reality. Wrong perception, wrong decision. So there is so much depth to the teaching of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There's so much depth to this Chaito Dharpana Marjanam. Huh? And this is also why sometimes people have disagreements with what Prabhupada says. Right? We don't talk about it in polite ISKCON society. Right? But actually, sometimes Prabhupada will say things that challenge us. Right? Really? Is that really like that? How could that be? It seems like, you know, my perception would be like it's like this. But Prabhupada, he's saying it's like something completely different. Mm-hmm. It is very, very interesting that as we go deeper into this theology, there are so many subtleties. And because there are so many subtleties, there's an implied meaning to that. There's an implied meaning. The implied meaning is that if you're dealing with a culture and a teaching that is extremely subtle, that is extremely refined, in order to properly understand it, the reader has to also be refined. It's a very, very deep theology, and it's not cheap. To get this, it requires an adhikar, a qualification of us. Prabhupada will sometimes allude to it. In certain purports, he will say something very simply about how when one comes to the mode of goodness, one will be able to understand the teachings better. In other words, our theology is encrypted by consciousness. I repeat, our theology is encrypted by consciousness. The more adhikar, the more purely one has develop their consciousness through this devotional service to Krishna, the more that one can enter into and fully understand. And then, of course, I'll come to this point in a moment. I'll give one a very interesting example, which was really struck me when I first heard about it. Our acharyas and our teachers, our acharyas and our scriptures say that there are how many verses in the Srimad Bhagavatam? 18,000. Right? We hear that. 18,000. So if you count the number of verses in the Srimad Bhagavatam, how many verses will you count? Who says 18,000? Okay. People are reluctant to answer, right? Because you know me too well. Okay. You're right, actually. If you count the number of verses in the Bhagavatam, it will come to 14,000, approximately. But our acharyas have said there's 18,000 verses, and they're correct. So what I'm getting at is something can be true, but it's not necessarily true in the way that we assume it's true. Okay, the standard verse in terms of the standard meter in Bhagavatam is called the Anushtup Chanda. Right? Let's see. Ete chamsa kalau pumsa Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. Right? 4 lines. 8 syllables, okay? So 32 syllables in total. That is the Anushtup Chanda. So if you take that as a template, if you take that as a standard template for the length of a verse, and then you look and then you count the total number of syllables, and you divide it by that standard meter, then you'll get 18,000. Right? So it's true that there are 18,000 verses, but not necessarily in the way that we think there's 18,000. So there are so many nuances, there are so many fine points to our Shastra. Now, interestingly enough, here we're being given a conundrum. And it's very interesting the way that Prabhupada has dealt with it. First of all, he says in the purport, this last purport that we read, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur points out that in the 74th verse of this chapter, it is stated, and when we say it's stated, where are these verses coming from? They come from who? Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, who's an acharya. Right, he is an intimate associate of the Lord in the spiritual world. So it's not just like, you know, it's not some newbie, okay? So Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur is pointing out that in the 74th verse of this chapter, it is stated that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited the temple of Shirali Bhairavi, okay? Bhairavi is actually a form of Durga, okay? That's what is being stated, but actually, this is what Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur is saying. He's saying, yeah, it says this in Chaitanya Charitamrita, but actually, at Siyali, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited the temple of Sri Bhuvaraha. Right? So he's saying that what's written in that particular 74th verse is not exactly correct. He's saying, actually, what happened was Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited the temple of Sri Bhuvaraha. And then Prabhupada will also end by saying there is a temple of Sri Bhuvaraha Dev nearby, not Bhairavi Devi. This is Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur's conclusion. That means you will find that there are times where acharyas disagree. Okay? What is actually meant to happen in the progression of a devotee is that you have such a firm foundation in the deep truths of bhakti, and not just the deep truths. It's got to go much deeper than that. It's got to be a firm foundation which is ultimately based upon realization. When there is a firm foundation based upon realization, then when we come to some of these nuances where there are disagreements between acharyas, it's absolutely fine. It's not an issue. In other words, the sambandha gyan, the spiritual knowledge, is actually not meant to conclude in complete realization. The sambandha does what? The sambandha gives you the conviction for abhideya. I repeat that. The knowledge is meant to convince us to engage in the activities of devotional service, specifically the chanting of the holy names of Krishna. So from sambandha, from proper knowledge, you will know that your knowledge is being cultivated properly if you have a desire to engage in devotional service. Not just devotional service. You'll know that the knowledge is really having its desired effect when it is anya bilasato shunyam. Jnana karmada navritam anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhakti uttama. When we come to our senses, we understand that actually the only thing that is going to cause anyone to be truly satisfied and is going to quench the thirst of the soul is to engage in unmotivated and uninterrupted devotional service to the Lord. So the sambandha gyan is to inspire abhideya, and it is by the abhideya that we get the prayojana. In other words, just being an armchair reader is not going to give someone love of Krishna. At the same time, we should also understand that hearing is itself a service. We know that. Why? Because the Bhagavatam itself says so. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, etc. And Prabhupada will go again and again. It says it begins with hearing. Right? In fact, we can understand that everything that we are is based upon what we've heard. Right? We are what we are right here and right now in our lives. It's based upon what we've heard. According to Ayurveda, even the sound vibration of your mother when you were in the womb has a huge impact upon creating certain samskars, certain fundamental samskars. And our whole life, unless we become conscious, is usually literally a reaction to so many of these patterns that we've picked up. And of course, those patterns that we pick up are not accidental. Those patterns that we pick up are also because of our own decisions and activities in our previous lives. So we're still responsible. Like that. So, excuse me. I know we'll get to finish early. So yes. So there's this understanding that there can be different views, different perspectives,
But if we have sufficient foundation and sufficient depth, we can reconcile these points. I've been having a very interesting debate with a friend of mine, which is a really wonderful devotee. And you know, we've been respectfully disagreeing. But I appreciate him so much because I appreciate how he's pulling forward the view and then I'm pulling forward the view. And we're having a dialogue back and forth. And one of the things that we were talking about, so his idea, which he put forward very respectfully, his idea was that you have to question things in order to understand the truth. And if you don't question things, then you'll never come to the understanding of the truth. Now, when he said that, I had a memory. I had a memory of, you know, this is many years ago. I was, 13 years old. And I was studying something about thinking outside the box. And they were explaining how different cultures have a different view on this idea. And he was explaining, I think they were talking about the Japanese culture. And how in Japanese culture, you don't have to tear something down in order to create something new. That's more Western idea, right? So we try to find fault with something. And only if we break it down or have some skepticism about something, then we can actually then go to looking at how to improve it. But that's more Western cultural idea. It's not there in many other cultures. So in other cultures, they can be very happy with things being as they are. And even if something is functional, they may see, right, what can we do to, what could replace this? How could it be better? How could it be done differently? My point to my friend was that actually, just by questioning something, you will never get the truth. That process of questioning, it is in our philosophy, neti neti, not this, not that. But it's there to deconstruct the false. It can be useful in that sense, but it can never construct the truth. Because the truth has to be given by mercy. Therefore, we call this the descending process of knowledge. Just by negating what we think is wrong, it never gives us the understanding of what's actually correct. In fact, it's even worse than that. When we try to negate what's wrong, we will negate it based upon this, Atmavam manyate jagat. We'll only be able to do it based upon our own worldview. I don't think this is a good idea. If there's a God, why does he do it this way? Meaning, I can't understand why God is doing this. Or, I see that he's doing this, but it doesn't feel right to me. But the whole point of Krishna consciousness, it begins where other religions end. Krishna consciousness begins where other religions end because it begins at the point that we understand that we don't know. And it doesn't matter what opinions we have. If I want to understand how the creation works, if I want to understand why things are the way that they are, it begins with humility. I have to go to the Creator and with a humble mood, ask them, why did you do things the way that you did? You see? And no amount of negation will solve the issue. No amount. So that's why it becomes very difficult for so many individuals. Because in order to understand the truth, you have to be humble before proper sources. And that humility is exactly the thing that every living entity is trying to avoid. Because humility means that there's a fundamental acceptance that I'm not God. And things don't have to work out the way that I say. It doesn't have to be done according to my tastes, right? Why does Krishna have to have blue skin? Like, what's wrong with pink? You know, like that. You know, like, is this kind of crazy ideas, right? You know, but I like a shade of yellow. Like, you know, why does it have to be like this? Yeah, it's not about you. That's the basic idea. It's not about us. And at the same time, it's all about the living entities. In these previous verses, look at this. It's just so beautiful. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, I received much pleasure from the talks of Ramananda Roy. The Bhattacharya replied, the Sarva Bhauma Bhattacharya replied, for this reason I requested that you meet him. It is all about the Lord's pleasure and the Lord is all about the pleasure of his devotees. Why is Sarva Bhauma Bhattacharya wanting the Lord to meet Ramananda Roy? Because he knows it will give him pleasure. Right? The reason why I set this up is because I knew that if you did this, you would get more relish. You would enjoy, my dear Lord. And because I love you, I'm trying to see how I can facilitate your own enjoyment. Right? Think about that. How much that kind of mood is absent in this material world. Huh? In fact, it's very interesting. When I was looking at these verses, I was thinking about our global ISKCON community. Huh? Because sometimes people have disagreements about how things are done and they have different views and et cetera, et cetera. But one of the things I think is really important to notice is that ISKCON has unlimitedly different experiences and flavors. In other words, there isn't one institution in one sense. There is the overall ISKCON society, and then there's your ISKCON. Right? Your ISKCON means that your actual experience of an international society is heavily, deeply mediated by your direct and close association. You understand? So this is really important. It is the devotees who you have an intimate relationship with. Intimate means that they touch your heart and your heart is open to their influence. That determines the flavor of your experience within this international society. So in one sense, there's one ISKCON, and in another sense, there are unlimited different ISKCONs. And literally, every devotee is experiencing a particular flavor of our international society based upon who we intimately associate with in this global community that we call the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, as set up by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Bhakti Vedanta. And my mind's, I'm getting completely hypnotized by Prabhupada. But by Prabhupada. It is a wonderful achievement. And there are different flavors, and we will meet different challenges, but those challenges will be mediated by our association. Therefore, this sadhu sangha is not a small thing. As is being demonstrated in these pages, the quality of our exchanges are so much more than we realize. And they have always left and will always leave certain impressions upon our consciousness that we will not be aware of, but that will come to our aid at the time of different challenges in our spiritual life. It's a real science. So we want to encourage you. Based upon that, just as Lord Chaitanya is doing here, we want to encourage you in these pretty lakshanam. We have to strengthen the heart of our devotion. And in our exchanges with the devotees, in our loving, sincere exchanges with the devotees, we can derive unlimited strength. We can derive so much strength. So please be conscious and intentional about who you associate with. And don't fall into any illusion that there's one institution. There is one institution and there are unlimited experiences of the same society according to who we allow into the heart. And that also includes how and the degree to which we allow Krishna into our hearts. The quality of our hearing, the quality of our chanting, the quality of our association is determining the quality of our destination in Krishna consciousness. Okay. So, let us pause here and just ask if there are any questions or comments. Hare Krishna. Any questions, any comments from the devotees? Okay. It seems, we have one? Okay. Yes.
Like a particular taste that you have, with the devotee. So, I mean, can you maybe describe another particular taste?
So, if you could repeat the question, I'm not sure if I understood.
So I think you're sort of mentioning about, when you're in association.
Yes.
With a devotee in Krishna consciousness,
yes.
Then it could be a particular taste that suits you, that really engages you. so that, you know, you describe one particular taste that I kind of relate to, but can you describe another one?
Sure. Sure. So taste can come from association, definitely, and does. Taste can come from service, right? How you're serving, what you're doing for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, especially a service is empowered when it's being given by our guru, etc. Taste can come there. Taste can come from chanting. Right? You know, even the acharyas have explained that when we come together in the congregational chanting, there's certain special flavors that come when the devotees get together, because that's actually our Yuga Dharma. Our Yuga Dharma is Nam Sankirtan. It is a congregational chanting of the holy names, and taste can come from there as well. And you have experience. You've been in a kirtan, and you feel certain emotions, certain feelings which are inspired and arising, you know? So all of these are sources of taste. Taste can come by studying the Shastra and seeing how all of these teachings come together to help us to understand and to have conviction in our practice as well. So those are some examples of taste. Is that okay? Thank you for your question. You wanted to say something more?
So you also mentioned sort of be careful, as in with your association.
Yeah. So what I mean by that is we should be the best association we can be first. That's the first point. And second, we should also seek out the highest in everyone that we associate with. When we interact with devotees, we should associate with the best within that particular devotee. That's the way to look at it. How do I interact with this person, this devotee, in such a way that I am able to connect with the devotion that they have and to both learn from that, grow from that, and also to honor that, to serve that as well? That's the idea. Okay. Okay, I think we're going to stop just because it's over, slightly over time, and I know that there's some announcements to be made. So I know that we have some devotees who are here who've completed the three-month residential, if I'm correct, the Veda residential, which is really wonderful. And as part of our culture of loving exchanges, we will also want to honor such devotees as well. So do you want to come up and then say who they are, and we can go from there.